This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
This Friday on TNT, the world premiere of Morgan Freeman in The Narrator.
Ever since I was a little boy, people have enjoyed the sound of my voice. And I figured you either get busy talking, or you get busy dying. The work is really quite easy. Why, even right now, I'm just sitting in a chair, sipping some tea and reading from a script. The wall is covered with something that resembles egg crates, except they're soft and spongy. Like a Twinkie. Like a Twinkie.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed and chocularity-filled studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into whimsy, amusement, and a little bit of education. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. What really makes that Morgan Freeman joke work, by the way, is the fact that he uses the word spongy. And that he accents it just that way. He does a sort of a, not an up down, it's sort of a lateral inflection. Sort of an inflection like this, where it almost trails off in a sort of neutral elliptical fashion. In any event, it is, let's see, and the great on turning happens now. There we go. All right.
So is that actually Morgan Freeman or someone who sounds like, I did not think that was
No, it's
Morgan
a terrible
Freeman.
Family Guy impersonation of Morgan Freeman.
Because that didn't really actually sound like Morgan.
No, the great thing about Family Guy is how they don't even really do that. It's like how South Park claimed, you know, all celebrity voices impersonated, you know, poorly. Family Guy really lives that statement. Because I think they actually get far fewer celebrity voices than South Park does. South Park, at this point, actually does pull a significant number of celebrities when you sort of least expect them to. Because Family Guy, they don't even really... Family Guy does celebrity voices the way Chevy Chase did Gerald Ford. He just sort of said, like, I'm Gerald Ford. And everybody went, well, okay. You know. Sort of a purely comedic approach to it, or a comedically pure approach to it, or both, or neither. Meow. All right. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to join us today with your comments, questions, clarifications, combinations of the above things, ruminations. Maybe you yourself have a recipe for arugula that you would like to share with us. Maybe something with a little bit of walnuts and maybe some raisins layered into it somewhere. Maybe, right? Because you've only made the arugula once, you said.
Oh, yeah. No. Yes. I thought you said a recipe for arugula. And I thought, no, you don't need a recipe for that because...
Arugula's cheese.
No. Arugula is a leafy green.
Wait, I'm conflating like 100 different things now. So there is arugula, which is a single serving of a little rolled thing.
Right.
And then there's arugula, all one word. And that is... So it's not a cheese. It's a plant?
Yeah. It's a leafy green. It's a kind of a slightly peppery, spicy flavored leafy green vegetable.
Is it one of those things you can only get in Chinatown? And it has tentacles on
no,
it?
No. No, you could buy it at your fancier groceries.
Maybe you can get it at your fancy grocery store.
It was very popular in salads in the 80s.
All right. Okay. If it's in a salad, that's really, if you want to hide things from me, like nuclear launch codes or just, you know, whatever, microfiche, put it in a salad, because I'll never look there. It'll be the last place that I ever inspect. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Wednesday, post-election day. So here in just a few moments, we're going to get... You're squinting at me.
Oh, no, I just had one of those thoughts, and I wanted to ask you something, but I didn't know if it was time to ask yet.
Well, let me just...
You have to do the whole intro to
the show. Let me get all this stuff out of the way, because we got the busy show up to and including Anna Griffin, who from the Oregonian, who's going to be with us much more... she's going to be earlier in the program than she normally would, because I want to get... Just right out of the gate, figure out where we are with the whole... Because, like, we don't have a governor or a next governor, right? They haven't figured it out?
Right.
They're still counting or recounting or something.
So our entire show is in chaos.
It really is. I don't even know that I can move forward. I'm not even sure how I can take another step in my existence, in my daily life. I think that everything has to come to an absolute and total pause. My entire existence has been torn asunder by not knowing whether it's the guy or the other guy. So she'll help bring all of that into stark relief. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will join us here in about 10 minutes. Later on in the show, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week... and will join us as well. We've also got Snuffwatch coming up today. And here's the thing. It's a guy you've heard, but probably haven't heard of. So that's coming up later on. Snuffwatch, also Geekwatch on the way as well. And probably other things, but I don't really know that we want to tease much beyond that, except for these headlines being worked on by Dawn Taylor.
Jerry Brown is once again governor of California. The Democrats lose half their seats in the Senate.
Well done.
And three superheroes are arrested for fighting in a parking garage.
Actual superheroes or figurative superheroes?
I don't think they're actual superheroes.
Okay. Hey, let me just ask you this. How great would it have been if Jerry Brown had actually taken the stage to California Uberalles and then just clenched his fist?
That would have been awesome.
And given sort of a thank you for electing me.
All right, he now has the distinction of having been the youngest governor of California and the oldest governor of California.
And it was like, it was like 27 years apart or something, right?
Because he was like 36, I think, the first time, and he's 72 now.
Because he was a governor of California from 75 to 83, I think, and then he quit to run for Senate or some damn thing that didn't really work out for him. Let me just ask you this. Here's the thing I really care about, just between you and I. Was or was not Jerry Brown at one point getting it on with Linda Ronstadt?
Oh, yeah. They dated for several years.
She
was with George Lucas for a while as well.
Hot as balls is what she is. I mean, even now that she's sort of... There's more of her to love.
I'm currently reading this book by Steve Martin about his stand-up days, and he used to hang out at the Troubadour and played the Troubadour Sunday, but he hung at the Troubadour with, like, Glenn Frey and the Eagles, and Linda Ronstadt played there a bunch. And he has a picture of her performing, because I guess he opened for her once, and talked about how the first time he saw her perform and he opened for her, and that she was standing on stage barefoot wearing a silver lamé mini dress that barely skirted the bottom of her panties. And he's surprised that she didn't slip off the stage from the drool.
Seriously?
From the audience.
I mean, that's the thing. You see Linda Ronstadt now, and she just looks, I don't know, she kind of looks like Edie McClurg or something. And you just kind of go, well, okay, whatever.
Everyone gets older.
No, I'm just saying it's like the hand of time comes for us all. But it's just a bit, you sometimes lose perspective that everybody has different stages of their existence. I look a lot different now than I did 10 years ago, different than I will look in 10 years. But you go back and you see her like on the cover of the Living in the USA single where she's roller skating and she's got like those, I know this sounds creepy, but I mean, she's just got like those satiny dolphin shirt things that are all like cut up the side. I'm telling you, man, that's where it's at. Baby, that's where it's at. In case anybody says, where is that thing? Where is it? You say, there, on the cover of this record with Linda Ronstadt.
Maybe that was the answer to Where's Your Bitches? On the cover of a Linda Ronstadt.
Jerry Brown has them all.
Jerry Brown has all my bitches.
I'm sorry, I am fundamentally bitchless today. Jerry Brown has taken my bitches from me. Hey, I've just got two little observations here. That's a lie. I got five little observations here, but I only do four of them. Leave you hanging on the fifth. In what order would you like to hear these? Here's what I got, Don. I got a story we have to learn more about. So I got the crux of the story, but there's more detail. So I want to search the rest of the story out later on.
Okay.
So I've got basically a lead, a tip for
All
you,
right.
as you in the newspaper game would say. So I got that. I got a quote, and I got two suggestions. So tip, quote, two suggestions.
Do a suggestion first.
Okay. Both of them or just one?
Just one.
Okay.
Then a tip. Then the quote. And then we'll see where we are from there.
All right. So suggestion, tip, quote, and then maybe the other suggestion.
Right.
Okay. First suggestion. This is really suggestion / observation. I'm surprised that there isn't some sort of a... I'm surprised that there isn't some porn star or a series of porn films using the name Uncle Remus.
That is a good point.
R-E-A.
Yes.
M-U-S.
Have you actually Googled this to see that it's not true?
No. Here's the thing. I thought about doing it last night.
Are you so knowledgeable on the encyclopedia of butt porn that you would know if there was one?
Why is it got to be butt porn? Why you go right to the butt with that?
Remus, please.
You can... There's no way for the...
incestuous butt porn, wouldn't it?
Don't ever say that again.
Incestuous, multiple partner butt porn.
Don't ever use that phrase. You know, we're about to talk to a respectable journalist, so just get all of your potty mouthing out right now, Dawn. Just get it taken care of.
You're the one who brought Uncle Remus and porn to the table.
I was just going to say there's many sections of you that could be reamed. It doesn't always have to be the butt, I would imagine. I imagine you could be reamed in any number of ways, Dawn.
In the ear?
Yes.
That's rare.
A good nose reaming is what that girl needs. And I'm going to give it to her.
I believe most of us, though, when we hear the word ream, if we're not talking about paper supplies, we generally think of the the butt plump.
Let me just tell you this. When I was living in Salt Lake City, one of the most popular supermarket chains there, I swear to God, was just called Reams. And it was just spelled just like R-E-A-M, apostrophe S, Reams. Where are you going to go? I'm going to go to Reams. Sounds like you were going to a really fashionable gay club.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, with like a little, it was a little bit racy. Okay, so that's suggestion number one. And no, I haven't Googled it because I didn't want to find out that somebody had already beaten me to it. Uncle Remus. Quote. Here's a great quote from Yahoo News, which I will probably recite again later. This is from the AP, by the way. It says, resurgent Republicans won control of the House and cut deeply into the Democrats' majority in the Senate in momentous midterm elections shadowed by recession. And then this is the great phrase. This is probably a little more truth than they expected. Ushering in a new era of divided government, certain to complicate things for the next 2 years. So there you go.
And God bless America.
And it's like the way they phrase it. And the thing is, and it's right next to a picture of what's his name? Of John Boehner, like, giving the thumbs up. And it says, like, ushering in a new era of divided government. And he's got the big white guy smile, like, it's swell, you know? And, like, he's got the little Colgate ting coming off his teeth. Genius. I want to get that made into a shirt. Let's see, third thing.
So there should have been a tip in there somewhere.
So the third thing here is that that Blizzard, which is the company that makes World of Warcraft, did you see this thing where now there's a World of Warcraft player who has been made into a character?
No, I didn't see that.
Because he was at BlizzCon or whatever, which is where just a bunch of pasty folk get together in a room and they talk about, I don't know, night elves or something. But they were doing that, where you can ask questions of or just prostrate yourself before the panel of guys from Blizzard that makes the game, and they have a floor mic. And so, you know, it's where people come up and go, I have a question about the statue that is at the beginning of the Hawkwind level. Was that inspired by, you know, or whatever? This guy instead gets up and he mentions a continuity error. He catches a continuity error in World of Warcraft that no one, apparently, including Blizzard themselves, had realized was there, was aware of, that they hadn't noticed it. And it just threw the entire game into chaos, apparently, because it upended some whole section of their storyline. And so, and he did it live at a con.
Awesome.
And also, he sounds like he's autistic, and I think he probably—I mean, he's just got that whole—he has that weird, like Asperger's thing when he talks.
Yeah.
But anyway, so rather than getting—this is why geeks are great. Rather than getting all pissy about it, they actually made him a character in the game, and he's like Azmaroth fact checkerous. I swear to God, and the character looks just like him, but like with horns.
Oh, nice!
It's freaking awesome.
I bet he is just the happiest geek in all of geek land.
Yeah, but the thing is, even when he's really happy, he just sounds like he's a robot. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing. Well, just because we have a moment here, I'm just going to give you my final little tip here. There ought to be an edgy children's TV character, like an animated character for children that teaches them lessons, called Jason the Dragon.
Oh, that actually...
Jason the Dragon.
That took me like a second for my synapses to fire and for me to get that. And then I realized, yes, that is brilliant.
Okay, there you go. That one's free.
Yeah.
A little Rick Emerson, wit and, and panache there for you. Jason the Dragon.
Mm.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian going to join us here in just a skosh. Also, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. And we teased the headlines. We talked about the Snuff Watch coming up. We got the Geek Watch coming up.
We did.
And so forth. I will just say, because we're going to be short timing it here before we get into the conversation with Anna Griffin, that I was suggesting right before we got on the air that we should almost create just a section of the whole opening here, the monologue, just called On What Things Did Dawn Taylor Waste Precious Hours of Her Life That She Will Never Get Back by Sitting in Front of an iPhone Last Night. And the thing is, and I apologize to everybody who's just like, oh, my God, another iPhone discussion. I think it'll pass within a couple days.
It will.
I mean, I think maybe it's like a fever that you'll burn through. So we'll get to that in just a second. But I just want to tell everybody that will probably happen at some point in the next few minutes. Just because that's how it is. It's like you said, it's like having a new love affair.
It is.
I don't know. All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. She writes a twice-weekly column covering life in this particular section of these United States. In Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon, from the Oregonian, Ms. Anna Griffin. Hello there. Howdy, and how are you on this fine Wednesday?
Here in the last happy place on earth. How you doing?
I am fantastic. Here's why I'm fantastic, because I get at least one more fantastic, glorious, unbelievably fulfilling day in which all of the political headlines are, extended and elongated, while apparently some old people in, like, Kiwanis hats sit inside a room counting slips of paper.
Doesn't it feel the weather outside like the political gods are rewarding us for not going insane here in Oregon?
That's the thing. It's like they've smiled upon us just because we didn't have, because we didn't just completely upend ourselves as a city, except in that sort of gubernatorial thing, which, and we were talking about this early on, that I guess they said there's some of these outlying counties or whatever that always seem to be late to the table getting their ballots done. But is it just that there's too many to count, or they have to recount them? I mean, why does it take so long to count them some years but not others?
I think that's a good question that I don't entirely – I'm going to start by saying I don't know the answer to that question. Multnomah County is big. Lane County is pretty big. There are a lot of voters, and there were a lot of votes turned in very late in the day yesterday and on the last day. So some of it, we saw turnout sort of lagging early in the process, right after ballots got delivered, and we saw in the end turnout's going to be pretty good statewide, and that means there are a lot of last-minute ballots that they have to count, and that slows things down.
So, what is it? I mean, do we just is it a thing where if you're a Dudley or Kitsop, or you're just basically sitting around in a hotel room somewhere, just sort of idly flipping back and forth between the Discovery Channel and ESPN2, just waiting for the phone to ring? I mean, it's like there's nothing they can do, right? They basically just got to sit there, or are they already preemptively preparing some sort of some legal brief that'll be filed somewhere if it goes against them?
Well, this is why you have aides around you. This is why you pay smart people money. They knew this was going to be close, really, really close. And so, yeah, both campaigns, I'm sure, have election lawyers who are probably over at various election offices right now making sure that ballots are counted appropriately and that all the ballots they want counted get counted. If you're a candidate, you're kind of hosed right now, because there really is nothing you can do. I mean, I think a great parlor game would be trying to guess what the candidates are watching on TV. Chris Dudley is probably watching the NBA Network. Kitsop is probably watching the Discovery Channel.
I
like to imagine him smoking, although I don't think he does. He just looks like he should smoke, doesn't he?
He does, and I totally – here's the thing about Kitsop, too, is I picture him – I don't know why, but just now I picture him watching a channel where there's just nothing but guys with shotguns just blowing things into small pieces. It's just like the all gunfire channel, and it's
he's watching Gunsmoke right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Violence Network, but it's just a channel where it's just nothing but things being blown into small confetti sized pieces by large guns. Was it expected to be? I know that it pulled tight in the last couple of weeks, but was it expected to be this close where we weren't going to get the decision last night?
I don't think it's stunning. My colleague Jeff Mapes, I think, keeps talking about this is going to be the closest gubernatorial race of modern times in Oregon. And so it was not a shocker that they didn't know last night. I mean, as Kitsop himself pointed out when he spoke at his party, Jeff Merkley was in a very similar position 2 years ago in the Senate race against Gordon Smith, that he went to bed down. He woke up. He was a United States Senator. Multnomah County just takes longer because there are more voters here, and that usually works in favor of the Democrats because most of the voters here are Dems, which is why even right now, even after I think there are like 12-30 numbers released, Dudley is still ahead, but all the analysis you see suggests that if the math keeps going the way we expect the math to keep going, Kitsop is going to wind up winning.
So they always talk about how Portland is a blue city inside a red state. To whatever extent that we know all of the statewide returns now, was that still the case, or did the state and the city as a whole list more toward the Republican side this time around?
I think what we're seeing statewide is not a sea change in this sort of rural-urban political divide, Democrats in Multnomah County, Republicans everywhere else, but we're seeing that the Republicans are the ones who got their voters out, particularly in legislative races. There was a lot of anger that they tapped into, and that in Multnomah County, younger progressive voters who voted in huge numbers for Barack Obama in 2008 didn't turn out this time.
One of those things they talked about with the 2008 election is that there were all of these ballot initiatives that they were using as basically the catnip, the sort of the social issues that they were using as the carrot to get people to the polls. And then while they were there, hey, I guess I might as well vote for that presidential race while I'm here voting, about weed or gay marriage or something.
I have this image of the average Multnomah County voter, paroxysms of joy rolling all over their ballot like a stoned cat. I like that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the deal is that everybody gets the thing in the in the mail and they look through and they know that they're supposed to care about the Senate race or the treasurer or the auditor or they know intellectually that is the thing that is a good American citizen they are supposed to be in, but nobody really cares about that. Everybody goes right to the whole thing of like, where's that thing about the weed? Because for lack of a better description, it is just the more interesting issue. It's what people can really kind of get their heads around. So, but 74 and 75, which were the medical marijuana dispensary and the casino thing, respectively, those both went down, which was surprising. I mean, I was really, really thinking that the turnout was going to get jacked up because of those two things, and they were both going to pass.
Yeah, I don't think the casino thing was a little, I think even people who gamble, I talk to friends of mine who, we love Vegas and love to gamble and love the idea of having a casino 15 minutes down the highway. Even crazy hippies that I talked to were a little squeamish at the idea of a casino that close, the idea of a casino that wasn't tribally run, but was just some private venture capitalists. And the marijuana thing, I just didn't think the marijuana thing was well packaged and well sold. And again, even some people who believe in medical marijuana had questions about what it was going to mean in terms of what it cost the state versus what it actually generated. And again, you cannot underscore enough the fact that these were very cranky voters. These were very angry voters, and you had pretty high turnout among Republicans and among Republican-leaning independents outside of Multnomah County. And in a presidential year, those people are not going to be the ones who are the deciding vote in statewide measures. But in a year like this, when you have young progressive turnout down in Multnomah County, that can make a difference, and that's why there's loss. I mean, you look locally, somebody like the Carol Collymore, Loretta Smith County Commission race, if that race is held in 2008, I bet you money Collymore, who is the young progressive who used to work for Planned Parenthood, who is very outspoken on gay rights, she stands a much better chance of winning than she did this year, and she just got, to borrow a phrase from the president, she got shellacked.
It is an interesting phenomenon that Republicans just sort of, when in doubt, they just default to no, as they're going down the ballot. It is any idea that they are not entirely familiar with, or if they have even a moment of indecision, they just immediately go to a really strident mustn't, and they just and they strike it, and that happened with Prop 19 in California too, which really, really surprised me because that state's economy, I mean, it's not even teetering on the brink of club. Like, it has, they literally have been paying people in IOUs, where Schwarzenegger's just behind the desk going, I will gladly give you a paycheck next week for 40 hours of work this week. And when they started pitching Prop 19 as like, this is a thing that's going to create revenue for our economy, which is putting everybody out of work.
I like how you just said Schwarzenegger is wimpy from Popeye.
That's the sort of multi-layered pop culture referencing that is the hallmark of the Rick Emerson program. That really is where I try to take it to the next level.
The medical marijuana thing is really interesting because there is a very persuasive argument to be made that we are broke, as you pointed out, and California is broke, and people are smoking it and are going to continue to smoke it. The horse has left the barn. Why not actually make some money off of it? I just don't think the proponents of Measure 74 connected those dots. I thought it was a really weirdly run campaign if I'm running that campaign, I get a picture of grandma on the side of every bus with, why don't you want grandma to get her meds?
Totally. I was going to say that, and the other thing is, maybe this is because I'm on a Boardwalk Empire marathon right now, but they really should have, if I were running the campaign, it had nothing, whether or not this is even accurate or realistic or whatever, the thing you do is you just link the prohibition of marijuana to the actual prohibition of alcohol that took place under the Volstead Act, where you just got a guy with a Tommy gun, just filling some dude full of holes up against a brick wall and go, you don't want that, do you? And then you just... you talk about how the man has got to come in and just keep and keep all the weed under lock and key, and he'll dispense it, and there'll be less violence and whatever. The thing with the casino and with the medical marijuana dispensaries here in Portland. This, to me, here's what this is. This is just like how everybody talks on their cell phone in the car, even though they know they're not supposed to. Yet at the same time, when you see somebody else doing it at the red light, you know, you get all pissed off. You're like, that guy's talking on his cell phone. And then you're on the, Blanche, there's a guy next to me in the car. He's talking on his cell phone, jackass. Because you believe that you are able to handle those things, but that everyone else is a fool. And I think that's the thing.
And we are a society of hypocrites, yeah.
Totally. That's the thing with the casino and the medical marijuana, right? It's like, well, if it was just me playing blackjack or, you know, getting high, that's fine. But, you know, I don't want that Meyer kid down the street having access to it because he's trouble. Is this stuff going to be back every couple of years now until they get it through, do you think? Or are some of these like one-shot deals where they try, they fail, they go home?
I think there's too much money in the casino for them not to be back. And I think medical marijuana, it reminds me a little bit of same-sex marriage. I think the momentum behind it is enough that it's inevitable that it is going to be more widely available, even if it's not full-scale legalization. There's too much money to be made, and there are too many people already doing it. It's just finding really the right timing to put it on the ballot. And I think 2012 is going to be fascinating because several of these issues are going to come back up again. Yeah.
What is coming up in the Oregonian, Anna Griffin?
It's all elections all the time.
Excellent.
We can't get enough of it. You have a couple more days in which, if you don't like politics, I would never say don't read the paper. I would just say if you don't like politics, flip back to the comics for a quick life.
Go back and just read some High and Lois and take your mind off things. All right.
I think it's all topical humor in High and Lois, though. It's all about the Republican Congress.
It's cut and all. It's really thinly veiled, but it's there if you look for it. Anna Griffin, reader in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Thank you, Anna. Have a fantastic day.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
There you go. Anna Griffin, ladies and gentlefolk. Awesome.
You know, that damn thirsty who lives next door, he's a reactionary. He's just too extreme.
Is thirsty the kind of chubby kid with the freckles?
No, he's High's buddy who has the red nose and is always like half in the bag.
Who's the one who has the
thirsty Thurston?
Is High?
Golf buddy.
Okay, High and Lois. That's the couple. Who is the kid? Is it Chip that has the backward baseball cap that covers his eyes?
Oh yeah, Chip's the teenager. He's the teenage son.
But he's got the blonde shock of hair, and then he's got the weird baseball cap that's pulled like way down.
Yeah,
there must have been something where like they must have just hired anybody to do comic strips like back in World War II, because they hired people who couldn't do eyes, and so they would just draw a hat real low. Hanna-Barbera, none of them could figure out how to make the neck attached to the body, which is why everybody wears a necktie. It's like Beetle Bailey. They couldn't figure the top of his head, so they just put his helmet down over his lips. I mean, it's all very strange. So I don't know what that's all about. All right. At the news desk, ladies and gentlemen, please make way for Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, former California Governor Jerry Brown has been reelected to the office he held in the late 70s and early 80s. In his victory speech Tuesday night, the governor-elect says he recognizes the deep divisions that have split Californians.
These are real divisions, and they're divisions tonight in California. There'll be divisions in the state capitol. They're the divisions in Washington. So I take as my challenge forging a common purpose. But a common purpose based not just on compromise, but on a vision of what California can be.
Governor-elect Jerry Brown says one of his first priorities in office will be to try to fix the partisan breakdown he's seen develop among members of his state's legislature.
By consolidating California into one power base and crushing our enemies under the hobnailed boots
of authority. I'm
hoping and
I'm praying that this breakdown that's gone on for so many years in the state capitol and we're watching it in Washington, that the breakdown paves the way for a breakthrough. And that's the spirit that I want to take back to Sacramento.
It's just weird.
Somebody wrote that for him.
I guess the difference is that he didn't lose the governorship last time. He quit to run for Senate and didn't make it. Because if he gotten voted out, you know, the American public, they don't like losers. If he had been voted out of the governor's office, they wouldn't have let him back in. But I think it's the fact that he walked away from it that let him sort of get back in this time.
I think it's a real sign, though, of how much people just didn't like Meg Whitman.
Yeah.
Because California is a largely conservative state. And Schwarzenegger, by all accounts, has done a pretty damn good job. And people, you know, of course, had issues with a number of things he's done. But I don't think that there's widespread dissatisfaction with him as a governor. So it's kind of it's almost like this isn't one of those backlash because
throw the bums out.
Yeah, this is more like, oh man, that Meg Whitman.
She's crazy.
She's horrible and nasty and leather faced and looks like she would just bite off your head and eat your brains. And she basically is only running for office because she's one of those rich people who goes, now what will I do with my billions of dollars? Like, I know, I'll buy myself a governorship.
Like stamp collecting of the rich and famous. Well, I could either balloon around the world like a douche, or I could run for something. The thing about Schwarzenegger, the thing that he gets knocked for, which actually I really like about him, is the fact that when he got into office, he was sort of, you know, he was pretty conservative about most things. And then, you know, but he found that the electorate didn't really want that. I mean, he was conservative on a lot of issues that the people of California are not conservative on. And so he actually adjusted. Yeah. He's like, whatever you want. He's like, I'm here. Look, Arnold works for you, you know, and he actually adjusted a lot of his administration's positions based on the actual, you know, people who voted for him.
Well, he's not a neocon. He's an old school conservative. I mean, he couldn't be married to a member of the Kennedy clan if he wasn't. But yeah, no, he's your old fashioned standard issue conservative.
Here is the great thing. Here's the moment that I really, really loved Arnold Schwarzenegger, the politician. It's when he was talking. I think he said this when he was running for governor. This is not when he said the whole thing. Everybody's going to have a fantastic job. He was just given some, I don't know if it was like a stump speech, but he might have been Larry King or something before he officially declared, but when everybody kind of knew, you know, what the deal was going to be. And there were all these, it was such a weird time because there were all these strange issues when Schwarzenegger started running where like television networks had to stop running his movies. Like, he couldn't play the Terminator films because that was considered, you know, because under the under federal election law, if you were running the Terminator movies, that counted as exposure, and you would have had to give equal time to, like, anybody who was running. And it was a very strange time. But I think it was Larry King that said, you know, tell me about Coming to America, your first exposure to politics. And Schwarzenegger told this great story about it. And so I come here from Austria and I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I turn on the television and I see a man talking about how government ought to be less intrusive and you ought to be able to keep more of your money. And he was a great inspiration to me. And he was telling it like full on Paul Harvey, like via the Alps style. And he said, Larry, that politician's name was Richard Nixon and he inspired me. And it's like the stones of a guy to get on TV and just say, like, I was inspired to run, as the governor of California because I love Richard Nixon. I mean, that was sort of great.
It's weird because the reason I love Arnold Schwarzenegger goes to like this one very specific weird moment that has nothing to do with him being a politician. It was from a promotional thing for the movie Predator. And it was one of those things where they sent like people from Entertainment Tonight or ABC News or something to the set. And they were talking to people about the movie. They talked to John McTiernan and they talked to some crew members. And they're talking to Schwarzenegger. And Schwarzenegger is standing there fully still in costume. He's wearing his grimy tank top. And he's chomping on one of his cigars like he always is. And he's talking about the movie and what they're doing with the movie and this sort of thing. And he says something. He finishes making a statement to the camera. And as he's talking, a crew member walks by with a big armload of equipment and smoking a cigarette. And Arnold takes the cigar to his mouth and goes, "Hey, you, no smoking!" And then looks at the interviewer and goes, "Bah!" And sticks the cigar back in his mouth.
That's fantastic.
And it was that moment I just went, I love him so much.
Awesome. Here is Don Taylor. Oh, by the way, in case you weren't listening last hour during two things, actually. If you weren't listening last hour during Legion of News, first of all, shame! You ought to be. Legion of News is the program that airs. This is the thing that I tried. Do you ever do this? Are you trying to explain to people the deal of us doing the two shows? And it just comes out of your mouth so much more complicated than it really is.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I'm just sitting there in my own head going, you're stupid, stupid, explain it better. But I can't. I feel like we had to hire someone to write a description of the Legion of News, Rick Emerson Show thing, because I can never make people understand what we're doing.
I can never even tell people what I do for a living if they don't know. That's
you're
the
a
thing
podcaster?
I've discovered. Yeah, it's like I go to get my coffee and they're like, so you on your way to work? Yeah. But what do you do? And it's like, well, I'm on the radio. Really? What station?
What station? Yeah.
Well, it's on the internet. Now I work in an insurance office. I can't even say anymore because I can't explain to people what
I've found it really difficult, actually, to come up with the whole – because podcasting, it's not like I have any problem with that. Not like – I mean, it's not like it has negative connotations. It's just not really it's not even that it's not inaccurate. It is just – it's not completely accurate.
No.
It is not wholly accurate because, of course, a podcast is like a very specific – kind of thing. I mean, that is a, you know, there's a downloadable, I think, it's a pre-recorded downloadable program that goes to your iPod, and everything else is something else. It's sort of become the generic, but I don't even know what my point was. But during Legion of News, which is the show we do at Cascadia.fm from noon to one, immediately preceding this show every day, we were talking about Meg Whitman, who's the eBay chick who is running running in California against Jerry Brown, and she's just so weirdly robotic. I was actually listening to these during the break between the two shows. Let me see if I can find the first cut from her here.
It is my hope that a new era of bipartisan problem solving can begin tonight, because the people of California deserve no less. And tomorrow, we are all Californians.
Californians. It's the strangest
tonight
downward.
Has not turned out quite as we had hoped. We've come up a little short, but certainly not for lack of hard work, determination, and a clear vision for making our state better.
Oh, she looks like that.
Oh, man, she's weird looking.
She is weird and creepy looking.
She really is. First of all, you know, she looks like, she kind of looks like, she kind of looks like Nora Dunn's impersonation of Patsy Schroeder. Let's see. So this is, now listen to Meg Whitman, and now, friends and neighbors, having heard Meg Whitman and the way that she ends everything in a strange, sort of monotonous, downward inflected manner of speech, listen to this here.
That is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
Tonight has not turned out quite as we had hoped. We've come up a little short, but certainly not for lack of hard work, determination, and a clear vision for making our state better.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable.
It is my hope that a new era of bipartisan problem solving can begin tonight, because the people of California deserve no less. And tomorrow, we are all Californians.
Why, you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal.
It is my hope that a new era of bipartisan problem solving can begin tonight, because the people of California deserve no less. And tomorrow, we are all Californians.
The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent.
All right. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Three people dressed as comic books characters were arrested after a fight in a Connecticut parking garage early Sunday.
A slap fight.
When police officers arrived at the Bell Street parking garage, they found Michael Sanchez, 25, of Stamford, Connecticut, dressed in a Captain America costume, and Vincent DeCara, 21, of Stamford, dressed in Spider-Man, assaulting a man around 1:33 a.m. The victim was not in costume. The officers were able to separate the men and determined the victim was DeCaro's father. Police officers determined that DeCaro and his father had gotten into an argument and it had turned to physical. After the fight was over between Captain America and his father, a woman dressed as Batman villain Poison Ivy hit Captain America. The woman, identified as Nicole Bitterly, 18, of New Jersey, was taken into custody.
Wait, so this is Saturday?
Yes, Sunday.
This is Sunday, so they're going to a Halloween thing,
right,
which makes this, I guess, somewhat less interesting. But still, if you were just a casual observer who happened by the parking garage and looked over there, that might actually give you pause.
Yeah, Captain America and Spider-Man
working a guy over.
And then Poison Ivy jumps in and punches a guy. Bitterly was charged with breach of peace. Sanchez was charged with third-degree assault. DeCaro was also charged with third-degree assault, as well as interfering with a police officer.
Fantastic. Here is Don Taylor.
A Salem, Massachusetts father is facing assault charges after being accused of firing a paintball gun at three girls. Officials said Ricky Betancourt, 37, tried to blame his 5-year-old daughter after being spotted shooting paintballs at several girls ages 7, 9, and 11. I just can't believe he heard the children and then aimed and shot, says his neighbor, Patty Bessilier. That's what's most upsetting. Bessilier lives very close to where the incident took place. Authorities said Betancourt was firing in the woods where the girls were playing near some rocks. Bessilier's 12-year-old daughter said Betancourt fired at her and his own 5-year-old daughter while they were sitting together, but he was out of paintballs.
Did you ever wonder what your neighbors would say about you if the cops or the reporter or somebody came by and started asking them questions? Said, hey, tell me about the woman who lives over in 15 or wherever. Would your neighbors even know who they were talking about? Would it be one of those, well, I saw her around but I never really talked to her? kind of things. If they ask the hot single dad who's out there sometimes, like, would he even really put together your name, or they would have to show him a picture?
Oh, and that creepy woman in the bad car who stares at me all the time.
All I see is a pair of eyes looking out from between the shutters, officer. I don't really know. I don't think my neighbors, I rarely speak to them. The only neighbors I really ever talk to are the ones who live next door to me because we share a trash can.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to negotiate, like, who's going to take it to the curb if one of us is going to be out of town. But you wonder if in the absence of that, if they would just make a lot of stuff up. If they would just say, oh, no, he's crazy. I saw him putting a strange bag in the trunk of his car last week. You know, just to sort of have something to say.
Well, also, you know, the whole parents and kids thing. I think sometimes it depends on what day you happen across the thing that's happening.
Right.
Because, like, I remember this one particular day, I remember very vividly, my father was trying to flush gophers out of our yard. He was, like, putting a hose down a gopher hole and was going to, like, fill it all up with water.
Does that really work?
I don't know.
Okay.
But it was one of those things where he was going to flood out the gopher holes and try and get rid of the gophers because he was really frustrated and really angry because there were gophers. And I was like 5 years old, and so I was like, I want to help. What are you doing? I want to help. And my dad kind of, I think, just wanted to get me out of the way. So he handed me a hammer, and he had me stand by a gopher hole, and he told me to hold the hammer over my head, and if a gopher came out of the hole, I should bash it in the head. So I'm standing there.
That was a real Kennedy compound you grew up in, wasn't it?
Well, and I do think, like, if the neighbors were watching this, here I am, I'm five, I'm standing over the gopher hole with the hammer in both hands over my head, staring with complete intensity, waiting for this to happen. My dad turns on the water over there, doing the thing, and to both of our complete surprise and astonishment, a gopher did actually pop its head out of the hole I was staring at, which terrified me, and I screamed, and I threw the hammer up in the air and then just ran away.
Fantastic.
So, and I think if the neighbors were actually watching that... That story probably wouldn't sound good for a third person.
Just extrapolating your entire personality out of that one story, just turning that into that tiny acorn of an anecdote into the because you know that is the thing that, you know, you would hear, like, Bill Curtis's voice, you know, saying it over like a grainy black and white photo of you. Neighbors say she killed small animals and had a pile of bones in her bedroom. All right. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up here later on, we have your Geek Watch, also your Snuff Watch, coming up in just a few. We'll also talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week here at the bottom of the hour. If you are listening to this program and thanking your lucky stars that it's beamed into your head every single day, providing you amusements and diversions from a cruel, uncaring world, you can thank not only yourself, your fellow subscribers, us, our fine business partners such as Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland. You can find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel, who's the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center, is a native Spanish speaker and is able to put together a school, basically, that eschews all of the things that made you think maybe years ago you weren't able to learn a language. Because if you're like anything like me, you just sat there in high school language class. And for me, it was German, which is like an impossible language anyway. You might as well just learn Klingon. I mean, there's no point. I mean, unless you just want to spend a lot of time, like, you know, like hacking up a bunch of phlegm while you're trying to get like a preposition correct or something. There ought to just be like a phlegm, you know, because like in German they have the umlaut, and I guess they have like a little accent thing as well. I don't know if they have the like any of the other sort of, like, they have a tilde or whatever. But there ought to just be something in German where it's over like a U. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, you're supposed to go like, you know, and just, you know, it means
actually,
ingest dairy before speaking.
If the umlaut is over an U. You, then it's ew.
It's the whole thing is just like, but it's like an entire language is just like spoken for the back of your trachea, you know, after having a lot of yogurt or something. In any event, but if you're like me, you just sat there in class thinking, like, I have no idea what's going on with any of this. I'm never going to graduate. Oh, I'm going to end up working at a shucks auto parts for the rest of my life. Kill me. And it was just because they were having me memorize stuff and then speak it back. And then they were surprised when I wasn't able to really, like, master the language. Like, I didn't really have, like, a fluency that they wanted me to have. So they don't do that at Castalia Language Center. They actually teach you how to speak conversational Spanish by having you speak Spanish in, yes, conversations. And they have something that is suitable for every language level, every level of proficiency and acumen. So if you know a little bit of Spanish, they've got something for you. If you're just polishing up or you're just brushing up on some education that you had years ago, they've got something for that too. And they'll find a time that works for you, a day and a time that fit with your schedule. You can find out more about it by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Center, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show right here on the Emerson News Network. Let's do one more here, and then we will take a break. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Democrats lost the House because, quote, we were too deferential to our most zealous supporters, said Indiana Senator Evan Bayh on Wednesday in the New York Times op-ed page. Instead of trying to placate those on the extreme left and motivate the base, Bayh argues that Democrats should have been shooting for the middle by trimming spending and reforming taxes. But Bayh's op-ed may have been written before the polls closed, the nation's airy Melbourne counters, because the Blue Dog Caucus, a coalition of centrist and conservative Democrats who have been pushing exactly that strategy, took a major beating last night, losing slightly less than half their seats. Out of the original 54 Blue Dogs, two members retired, two others ran and lost races for higher office, and only 26 actually won. South Dakota Representative Stephanie Herseth Sandlin, the coalition's co-chair for administration, and Indiana Representative Barron Hill, the co-chair for policy, both lost their seats, while North Carolina and Utah, the other two leaders of the group, managed to hang on. Of the 34 Democrats who voted against the health care bill in March, 24 of them were Blue Dogs. Only 12 won re-election.
So wait a minute. I thought you were just sort of, I thought it was just like a colloquial thing there, the Blue Dog thing. Was that actually the name of the party?
It's in a way, it is a colloquialism, but they do actually self-identify as Blue Dog Democrats, a Blue Dog caucus, that sort of like log cabin Republicans. I don't think there's an actual, you know, membership card. It's just basically you identify yourself as such because of your ideology.
All right. OK. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. I was trying to find, and it's in my email somewhere. I have to dig it up. A scan of the you know, there's that way that like that like election profile thing that they send, you know, to you, like what you like, you get it in the mail. You just like the voter's handbook or whatever, where it's like they lay out all the issues. There was something, and it does me little good to actually describe it. I'm going to actually I'll find it during the break and I'll stick it up on the rickemerson.com/pictures section. But there was something amusing that got forwarded to me by several people in Washington State. So we'll get to that here in just a few. Coming up later on, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. We've also got Geek Watch on the way, plus a Snuff Watch coming up. So stay right there. Don't forget, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, Don Taylor can be heard at Cascadia.fm as part of Ham-Fisted Radio. What's coming up on Ham-Fisted Radio today? Don?
I'm really not sure. I'll probably end up talking about my iPhone.
Okay.
Because, you know. That's
just
all I care about.
Go ahead and
just
say it now. What is it that you wasted hours of your life doing last night?
Okay, this is all Seamus's fault because he gave me a $20 iTunes gift certificate and said, buy some apps. And so, of course, one of the first things I do is I buy Angry Birds.
Oh, see, here's the thing about Angry Birds, which I don't think is just that. I think there's probably that's for the iPhone or for the Android and whatever anyway. So I think it probably is a multi-platform game. But when I got the iPhone, a guy was like, sell me the iPhone. Was like, he's like, you got to try Angry Birds. And I just said, I don't know what that is. Is that a drug? Is it what are we talking about? And he said, no, it's a game for the. And I, for whatever reason, I have successfully resisted putting any games on my iPhone at all. I think because I know once I open that door, it's just going to be a road to Armageddon. I'm never going to get anything done. So it's like the Plants versus Zombies, which is the thing everybody's talking about. Or there's actually a game, and it's I want to say it's by Funny or Die, but I don't think so. It's from a group kind of like that. It's from one of those sort of like. Very prominent online comedy, you know, not troops, but like one of those comedy websites. But it's a game where you are a bored office worker, and the whole point of the game is you have reached such levels of boredom that you have really no alternative but to kill yourself. And the entire game, that's the premise. The entire game just consists of you finding things in the office that you can harm, maim, injure, damage, or kill yourself with. And you get points if you can do it especially quickly or in an especially bloody or gratuitous or violent fashion. And everything in the office is usable. Stapler, you know, the soda machine in the kitchen, Xerox machine, paper shredder, pencils at the next guy's desk. And that's the it's like a Hertzfeld cartoon, like come to life as a video game, where all you're doing is just walking around the office, like stabbing out your eye. And then it just says like 10 points and then blood sprays everywhere. And I saw the demo and I thought, I can never own this because all I will do is sit and play this game all day.
Yeah, Angry Birds is one of those games that just sounds really lame. You have a sort of a slingshot thing, and you fling, with your finger, you drag these birds, and then you fling them.
Right.
And the birds hate the pigs, and they're these pigs, and the pigs are in these constructions surrounded by boards and pieces of like glass, and you fling the birds, and the birds fly into the thing and knock the boards down and kill the pigs, and then as you go along, the constructions get more and more difficult, and then you have different kinds of birds. You get the bird that if you fling it, and then at some point while it's in midair, you tap on the phone. It goes really fast and it dive bombs. And there's like ones that you tap on the glass while it's in midair. They turn into three birds. And there's one that are bird bombs that they explode. And it sounds really stupid. But the thing is, the game, the graphics are really cool. And it's so sort of intuitive and responsive the way that it responds to you doing it. And it's so simple. But it's like insanely addictive. And it's also really addictive because it's really satisfying. Because when you do finally achieve the thing, the birds are all really happy. And they go, wee, yay, woohoo, yay. And
I'd like to point out, you're like 60, by the way. Just, you know, I mean, just FYI, in case you weren't really aware of this. All right. Well, not that I'm any better, of course. I'm just saying we are... Can I just tell you, last night, here's how I spend my evening. Just now, we're doing the beginning of the program in the middle, but that's okay because we had to get to the Anna Griffin thing because it's a busy day. It's a day, not a chaotic day, but everything's getting jiggered around a little bit because I wanted to get the election stuff right out of the gate because, as she said, did I tell you this last night? She said it's going to be sometime today, maybe when they get the gubernatorial thing, figured out. But I got, and I don't think there's any problem with me repeating this, but I got last night, and I think he, in fact, sent it to me. It was our friend Siegfried sent me a picture, like a snapshot from KGW.com or something, where they're saying gubernatorial race probably not decided until Wednesday. And then they just showed like a picture of like a podium somewhere at like one of the campaigns thing. But it was like Siegfried standing behind the podium on the stage.
How did you somehow not save this photo?
It's on my phone. I'll forward it to you. But there's like no explanation given. It was just like Dudley or Kitzhaber. We won't know till tomorrow. And then they show the podium with like the governor's seal or whatever. And then our friend Siegfried is just standing there, just looking out like, hey, for no reason. It was like,
if we can't decide, it'll be this guy.
Yeah. And there was no caption of like, who the guy in the photo standing behind the governor's podium actually is. Like, there's no, they don't explicate that. anyway, so we're doing the beginning of the show right now in the middle, but that's okay, because I will tell you that, because I had this thing where as I think I mentioned yesterday, where Lauren's been out of town for like 5 weeks, and we were all under the impression that she was going to be back yesterday, because she'd been telling me she was going to be back Tuesday, so I thought she was going to be back Tuesday, but it turns out, it just has to do with the jet lag and the time zone change. She's like leaving on a Tuesday, but it's that thing where she leaves and she gets back the same day or something. So she thought it was Tuesday, but it's really Wednesday. So yesterday I was thinking, oh boy, I gotta be ready for Tuesday because she's gonna get home and the house has got to be clean and the whatever. And so I gotta spend all night Monday night going through the house and tidying things up and putting things away and getting rid of this garbage that's piling up in the kitchen. Then at the very last moment, I looked at the itinerary and I realized that because of the time zone change, she had it wrong and she's really back tonight, not last night. So what do I do? Do I say, well, now I've got 2 days to clean, so now I can actually just make sure that the house is twice as tidy as it was going to be before?
You could pace yourself.
Exactly. No, no, no. I just wait until last night at around 9 p.m. to say, well, I guess I ought to start cleaning. And the house is just like a Superfund site, basically, at this point. So I'm just going from room to room, just cursing myself and hating life and just being angry at everything as I'm scrubbing out the toilet and like putting piles of Totoni's pizza boxes in the kitchen and the whatever.
Here's just a question. I don't suppose it occurred to you at any point, but when she went out of town, you predicted that this would happen.
Yeah.
So at any point, did it occur to you if you didn't make such a mess as you went along?
No, but that's like telling the guy, like, when he opens the vial of crack, like, you're going to end up with your pants down in an alley somewhere, covered in vomit. Maybe you ought to just not open the vial of crack. Or maybe open the vial of crack, but then give it to somebody else and have them portion it out to you. And he goes, yeah, it's a good idea. That's it is with me. I sort of registered that intellectually, but then here I am. Mm. So I got the house sort of finally clean. And by the way, as I mentioned, because Lara's not here, so of course there was nobody to remind me to take the trash to the curb. So the garbage cans are just filled to the brim. I mean, it's like they are basically large nut cans full of snakes at this point, where it's like if you open the trash can, suddenly it's just going to cover you with rinds. So I'm having to find alternate places to put the trash. And so what I found last night actually is that there's this space between the side of our refrigerator and the wall that is perfect for sliding pizza boxes into. So I've actually just taken some of the trash that won't actually like rot or go bad. So it's like just paper trash. Like it's not, you know, like it's not organic. It's just sort of like wrappers. And I've put the wrappers inside some pizza boxes. And then the pizza boxes have been slid down between the wall and the refrigerator itself.
Are you hoping that she won't notice this?
Ah, here's the thing. It's a largely shadowed area, Don.
And you're just going to smuggle them out later at some point?
Yes, I am. I'm going to keep them there. And then at some point when her back is turned, I'm going to say, look, a shiny thing. And then I'm going to grab them and I'm going to run out the front door with them. Or I'll do it late at night when she's in bed. Also, I removed a light bulb from that section of the kitchen, so you can't actually turn the light on. So I've contrived to keep that area of the kitchen shrouded in darkness so she won't. Because if you were to sort of squint and peer back next to the refrigerator, you would just see like five different large pizza boxes back there. And then if you were to take them out, they would just explode with trash. And then you would probably, you know, then the entire thing would be, you know, then you would realize who you were living with.
So now what are the odds, though, that you won't do this? You will not remove them?
I won't remove them. I'll forget about
it. And then like months will go by and all of a sudden Laura will go, honey, what? Why are there a bunch of pizza boxes behind the refrigerator?
Ideally, it'll be one of those things where we move and just leave the fridge behind, and that'll be a little gift to somebody else. So don't even get me started on the thing. I before I went to bed last night, I suddenly got on this OCD thing about having to make sure that all of the tea lights that illuminate all of my various Halloween decorations had fresh batteries in them so that the house can look, you know. Because she didn't get to see the house in its decorated state. And so I'm leaving all the decorations up until she gets home. But then I was just filled with fear, the kind of fear that is completely irrational and that therefore you only get at like 3:15 in the morning about something totally stupid. And I was getting ready to go to bed and I saw one of the tea lights that's inside like, you know, it's inside like a spooky Halloween house that flickers or something. And one of the tea lights seemed a little bit dim to me. And I was over taking it apart and looking at the battery. And then I had to go through and systematically replace every battery and every tea light and every Halloween decoration in the house because there was just no way I was going to be able to go to sleep otherwise. It was just going to haunt me and plague me while I tried to snooze. Mm. So that's how I spent my...
It's hard to imagine why your dogs are as neurotic as they are.
Yeah, I suppose. All right. Well, there was no point to any of that. And so forth. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Later on, we'll talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Also, Geek Watch on the way, plus your Snuff Watch. And you are listening to the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
She's got me in her hand.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Wednesday coming up here in about 10 minutes. We'll talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. All right, so I want to thank... Who is it that actually sent this to us? This is Eric. So listener Eric in Washington said, have you heard about this? There was a measure on the ballot that was voted on that seeks to amend the Washington state flag to include a leech. Check out Measure 1069, which is attached. He said this is absolutely real. And so he put a scan of this in. And this was Measure 1069, which was on the ballot in Washington, to replace the seal of the state of Washington. I will just read you the opening here. It says...
with a leech.
It says, an act relating to changing the seal of the state of Washington from the vignette of General George Washington as the central figure, and beneath the vignette, the figures 1869. That's what it says now. So it's George Washington. It says 1869, which I guess is when they founded the state. To a tapeworm dressed in a three-piece suit attached to the lower intestine of a taxpayer. As the central figure encircling the vignette will be the words, committed to sucking the lifeblood out of each and every taxpayer. This would amend the Washington Code 1.2.080 and adding a new section. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually, here's the thing, I totally would have voted for that. Just because the idea of having a tapeworm and that they have to note somehow that the tapeworm is not just attached to a taxpayer, but is in fact attached to the lower intestine of the taxpayer.
Nice.
Because that's where you really, that's where you go. So, I mean, that's the, you know, that's the amusing part of democracy right there.
And this didn't pass.
It didn't, but that's only because they didn't have me pushing for it, because I would have made sure that everybody, I mean, it's like the Santa Cruz and the Fighting Banana Slugs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're just the best mascot ever.
Yes.
Back in the mid-90s when I was working at a talk radio station in Salt Lake, I really, really pushed hard for us to have as our station mascot a tapeworm, because tapeworms are hilarious to me for some reason. But it was going to be the whole thing of like the tapeworm and like a baseball cap and sunglasses, sort of a like a poochie kind of a tapeworm. And it was going to be Timmy the Tapeworm, Timmy the Talk Radio Tapeworm, I believe was going to be his full name. And they just didn't see the humor value there.
Oh.
They didn't. It was a pre-irony time, I think. I don't think they didn't quite understand my rarefied wit. At the news desk is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do our snuff watch.
Here is your snuff watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor with your Snuff Watch.
Longtime TV announcer Charlie O'Donnell died unexpectedly at the age of 78. He worked on dozens of game shows, but O'Donnell's agent, Fred Westbrock, says his best-known job was undoubtedly Wheel of Fortune.
Charlie announced Wheel of Fortune in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, and in 2010. That's 5 decades of announcing the same show.
I wonder if Charlie Westbrock, is that his name?
Fred Westbrock.
I wonder if he's just been working on this forever, if he's just been honing and polishing this particular bit of delivery.
What I want to know is, did Fred Westbrock begin his career as a voiceover guy and then move to being an agent? Or just managing voice guys all these years has given him this voice?
Just rubbed off on him.
O'Donnell's booming voice was first heard nationally on American Bandstand, and Westbrock says O'Donnell was exactly what you'd expect a game show announcer to be.
Charlie was around 6'5". He was a big guy, but I tell you, he had a big heart.
And a big voice.
And then it just ended. So let's hear that first one.
Charlie announced Wheel of Fortune in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, and in 2010.
He sounds like a guy who's really happy about giving you the weather forecast in one of those dial-a-number things.
He shouldn't be this happy if, like, a guy just died.
Charlie announced Wheel of Fortune in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, and in 2010.
Well, maybe he's just... Wait a minute. What do you mean in the 90s and in 2010?
Well, 2010 isn't the 90s.
No, but that just makes it sound like it was just the 1 year.
Charlie announced Wheel of Fortune in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, and in 2010.
Oh, okay, in the 2000s is what he's saying there. Okay, all right. I thought it was like maybe he knew he was nearing the end of his life, and they brought him back for one big finish or something. Like the gang wanted to get together for one more heist or something,
It's too bad you don't have anything that actually has his voice, so that we could hear his voice.
I actually wasn't going to prepare. Here's the thing: I thought about it. And then I didn't because I thought, well, everybody knows exactly what that guy sounds like. All right, well, I'll dig some up for later on in the show. We'll end the program with it. I actually was doing that last night, and then like a little voice popped up in the back of my head that sounded not unlike Fred Wasbrock, and it just said, everybody already knows what he sounds like. This is superfluous. And I said, well, all right. And then
all right,
I just
voice in my head.
Then I just moved
on. You know
on.
Best.
Okay, can you name any other game show announcers? And I'm guessing that if you can, it's probably the only other game show announcer that anybody can name because it's the only other one that I can announce.
Not off the top of my head.
The only other announcer that I can name is was Johnny Olsen, who was the announcer on The Price is Right for the longest time. And I remember when Johnny Olsen died. I was maybe like, I don't know, 12 or 13, something like that. I mean, I wasn't a kid, but I mean, I wasn't, you know, but I was fairly young. I remember it actually kind of, like, it really brought me down because Bob Barker gave something a little on-air, you know, a tribute to him and said, you know, and he's been right here by my side for the last 35 years. Johnny, he'll be missed. And I was just, it was like, and it was not too many years after the traumatic passing of Mr. Hooper. And so I was just sitting there in front of the my only real friend, the television, just mourning the passing of yet another comrade. Hey, is Don Pardo still alive?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
All right. He seems like a guy.
I think he may have died a couple of years ago.
Even if that's true, doesn't it seem like he should have died like forever ago?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was like 1,000 years old. I mean, he was old when they started SNL, and that was like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event, so that guy's dead. The voice of Wheel of Fortune.
Of Fortune.
I got two questions for you. I got one observation, two questions for you. The observation is, do you agree with this statement?
That's a question. That's not an observation.
No. Do you agree with the following? Observation? See, it's an It's a thing inside a thing.
Okay.
It's sort of like it's a nougaty statement like center wrapped inside a wrapped inside an interrogative shell of goodness.
Okay. I will.
Sometimes I have no idea what the hell I'm talking. Sometimes I listen to myself talk and I just think to myself, what a jackass you are, Rick Emerson.
This is going a long way to explaining why I have to go home in the afternoon and take a nap.
Sorry.
Just trying to follow you is just exhausting sometimes.
I was just going to say, do you agree, though, that there are two kinds of people in this world? There are Jeopardy people and there are Wheel of Fortune people.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
it. I mean, and you're a Jeopardy person.
I am a Jeopardy person.
But you know what? Every Jeopardy person has in-laws that are Wheel of Fortune people. I don't know what that's all about, but it's true.
I am crazy good at Wheel of Fortune, though. I just don't actually like the mechanics of the show. But no, I'm one of those people that it comes on and everyone's watching it and like three letters come up and I go, you know, Straits of Gibraltar. And everyone in the room hates me. I'm really crazy good at Wheel of Fortune.
That's pretty impressive, actually, because I'm not. That's the thing that I'm terrible. You know, it's like people think that I would be good at like Scrabble, because you know, because I got the lexicon and the reading and the writing and stuff, and I'm terrible at that. You know what else I'm terrible at? Crossword puzzles. And you'd think I'd be good at those because that's a combination of two things that I'm presumably good at, which is like trivia and language. I am terrible at crossword puzzles. I'm so bad at them that they make me angry.
I'm actually pretty good at crossword puzzles.
See, and I always end up next to someone that is like, you know, like at a job or on the bus or whatever. I'm always next to somebody like, hey, what's a five-letter word for inflationary? And I'm, you know, and it just, and then
surge.
And then they'll hand me the thing and I'll look at it. And then it's like the trivia night where it's like, I don't care. And I am, in fact, actively opposed to taking part. But then it's like I'm pot committed. It's like I just have to do it. And then I have to try to get the entire thing done, just hating it the entire time. But I am terrible at Wheel of Fortune. I'm great at Jeopardy. But Wheel of Fortune is a thing that I found myself. And plus, it's confusing now. And this is maybe not a recent change. But Wheel of Fortune is the last time I accidentally watched part of it. It was the whole thing was flummoxing because they no longer have you do the shopping thing at the end of it.
No.
When did they stop doing that?
Oh, years ago.
Really?
Yeah, decades ago, yeah.
So how do they how do they do it? Like what
you
is
just win money.
They just give you
trips.
they don't have you go through and go, I'll take the ceramic tigers.
No, you just get the money or like you get the fabulous vacation if you spun and you got the trip to Mexico thing and then you won. You just get the stuff.
Well, that seems to have taken a lot of the joy out of it. Because the whole point was that it was that you actually were shopping with somebody else's money. That seems like the little. Now, the only downside, of course, was like it was like going to a redemption center at like the Lloyd Center or video game arcade where there was just like crap nobody wanted.
Oh, yeah. It was all like, you know, giant ceramic Dalmatians.
Yeah.
And things that, you know, you don't really want.
It was always a lot of things that you used to decorate like your fireplace. It was like a thing that would hang above it or like a set of like solid gold like pokers or something.
Yeah.
Something that nobody would have any desire to own. What they should have done if they'd asked me, Rick Emerson, about this, which demonstrably they did not. They should have kept the aspect of Wheel of Fortune where winners be shopping, but then they've but you're shopping through something that has been tailored to your own taste.
Yes.
Where you fill out a questionnaire before you even compete, and then if you win, it's like Don Taylor's fantasy store.
Yeah.
Where it's like all kinds of like cool stuff that you would love to buy, but that you would never be able to locate or afford. See, wouldn't that have been much better than just
yes.
like, and here's a gift certificate? Because now Wheel of Fortune is just a dick husband who just gives you some 20s at Christmas and just says, and I love you and stuff, and then just goes back to, you know, playing Xbox. It's exactly like that.
Yeah, I can't watch Wheel of Fortune because I get really angry, and then I'm that complete cliche person who's screaming at the TV going, don't buy a freaking vowel. What the hell's wrong with you? Are you retarded? And then I'm just, and I get so angry, and it's just not worth it.
All right. Hey, do you know Pat Sajak is a conservative columnist, and he writes an ongoing series of opinion pieces about Republican ideals?
I did not know
and
that.
And it's called, like, Sajak's Soapbox or something.
I'm not surprised by that.
And here's the thing, and it's both irritating and dull at the same time, not unlike Pat Sajak himself. I do believe, although I cannot guarantee that this is Kelly Clark, arts and culture editor from Willamette Week, joining us right now on the telephone. Hello, Kelly Clark.
Hey there, you guys.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine. You guys seem fired up.
It's a good day to be alive. We are rolling around in the glory of life like a dog on a freshly cut lawn.
Aha.
It's exactly
so
like that.
We're talking about the weather and not the fact that we don't have a governor yet. Correct?
Yes, yes. Not so much the weather, but we're talking about this. And then, so I'm going to tell you what we're talking about, then it's going to be followed up by a question. we are talking about the fact that, what was his first name from Wheel of Fortune, Don? Was it Dan?
Charlie
O'Donnell?
Yeah.
So Charlie O'Donnell, who was the longtime announcer for Wheel of Fortune, he passed away. And so we were talking about the great impact that American game shows have had on the cerebral development or lack thereof for all of us. Do you agree that in this world of ours, there are two kinds of people, Jeopardy people and Wheel of Fortune people?
Oh, my God, absolutely. In fact, I was just going to say, I hope that you watch Jeopardy and not Wheel of Fortune.
Exactly. My second question to you is, and everybody has an answer to this, if you were to be on The Price is Right and you were only, you were able to pick the game that you would play, which game on Price is Right would you play?
Man, I don't know. I don't watch Price is Right annoys me so much that I don't even remember what games they play. I just remember that they spin the stupid wheel and then they guess at things. So, and they have to wear costumes, which is just pointless. It's such a horrible show. I don't know. Isn't there one that they have to guess the prices and then a little car moves forward and then if they keep guessing them right, the car, you know, it wins the race like NASCAR, but insane.
I'm sorry. I'm still back on the revelation that you, Kelly Clark, arts and so-called culture editor from Willamette Week, don't like Price is Right.
Yeah, it's just not my thing.
Is that
maybe some password? Can we do some password, maybe? Or some win, lose, or draw?
No, she's right.
I would like those.
Price is Right is awful.
It's awful now that you're an adult and you've got other amusements to now that you've got Angry Birds to occupy your time on the iPhone. But I'm saying, in the formative years of your television viewing life, I mean, Price is Right was, I mean.
Yeah, but it was – no, I never
– maybe for your formative years.
Yeah.
But I always passed prices right by and like the pyramid one or – I really loved Password for some reason. And whatever was the really irritating game with no double whammies, I also enjoyed that.
That was Pressure Luck.
These are the things that I watched when I was a kid. So.
No. I was a big fan of Pressure Luck. Also, Sale of the Century. Also, I was really a huge – now, thinking back at it now, maybe it is a me thing because I was a huge fan of game shows.
Do you remember a show called Treasure Island? And they had these people and they had to like wade around in water and go across little drawbridges and there were these little islands and they had to like find hidden treasures and they played as families.
Was one of them a Valkyrie?
No, but I have to tell you, that brings up my favorite game show of all time.
Double Dare.
Which is hands down Double Dare.
Double Dare is great. Is it now? Does that show still exist? Like, because they made it like an adults and kids, like it was like a family thing for a while. And I think there was a kid version only, and then there was a version that was like for the whole family. And it toured, and it went state to state, and you could actually, you could like go to the mall and take part in an ad hoc game of Double Dare. Do you know if that show even still exists?
This show does not exist anymore because I checked and I've always wanted to be on it. And I maybe someday, you know, maybe get later down the line when I have a family, maybe I will force my kids to go on Dumbledore with me and we'll get Mark Summers to stop doing all the stupid food things he's doing for the Food Network and the Travel Channel and to go back to what he was truly meant to do, which is host Dumbledore.
Okay.
It's the best show ever.
I'm going to ask you
this. I mean, it's got slime and whipped cream and weirdness and trivia questions. All in one.
All right, I'm going to ask you this right now. If it was your choice, if you could either go on Double Dare with the outcome unknown, or you could go on Cash Cab and I spot you half the questions.
You know what? As much as I love Cash Cab, it still had to be Double Dare.
All right, okay.
Also, my husband, who would be my partner, has an excellent low center of gravity, and I think he could do some of the physical challenges very well, while I would totally rip it up on trivia, and I think we could be the king and queen of Double Dare. It'd be awesome.
A low center of gravity, huh?
Okay, it might be apparent that we talked about this sometime in the last month.
Is that what the... About
how awesome we would be as a team on Double Dare.
Is that what the kids call that now, having a low center of gravity?
This conversation has come up at our house once or twice already.
Okay.
He doesn't slip and slide on things, man. Like, I think he'd be able to get through the tube with the tongue and... Yeah, I think it'd be great.
All right,
I'm getting excited just thinking about Double Dare.
This conversation has gone so far afield from probably anything you anticipated talking about when you called in. Before we get to Portlandia, which is one of the things that it's like Leverage was a couple years ago, where it's everywhere you go, everybody sort of. Talking about her, asking, you know, if you know anybody who acts or if you know anybody
sure.
who works in film, everybody's sort of, you know, asking, like, well, are you taking part of Portlandia or whatever? So we'll get to that here in just 1 second. But I wanted to ask you about a phrase that I don't really see that often in my inbox, and that phrase is this. This is from something you sent to Cheryl that she forwarded to me. Quote, a giant feast of pig intestines and mud bugs, end quote.
Yeah.
Please to give some context to that.
Really? Do you need them? I don't understand what's confusing about that phrase.
Well, I don't need them, but the context that I might put around them may not have anything to do with the reality of the phrase's intended use.
Well, pig intestines are better known by their southern name as chitlins or chitterlings, southern delicacy. The pig intestines that have been boiled for like 8 years to get all of the impurities and nasty, horrible smell of death out of them. And then you boil them again with, you know, onions and garlic and all sorts of good stuff. And then you put them together, you know, kind of like you would serve like in a stew. You can serve them a bunch of different places and they're a southern dish. And, we have a local soul food cafe called Poshine's, which is in Kenton, which is absolutely great. If you haven't been there, you should totally go. They make really great, you know, chicken wings and hush puppies and things that don't involve pig intestines every single day. And once a year, they do a big chitlin and crawfish feed. They celebrate their anniversary, and then they also use it as a fundraiser for a bunch of nonprofit programs. Poshine's is actually part run by Celebration Tabernacle Church, and they have a work program for youth. So a lot of the money that from this festival, you are eating pig intestines and mud bugs, otherwise known as crawfish, and then they give the money to help a bunch of nonprofit programs.
So it's eating intestines for children.
For children.
Okay.
Do it for the kids.
Have you had, and I'm glad, by the way, that you clarified what chitlins were, because in one moment I realized that I didn't know that, and that also that I had never actually... That I'd actually never known, that I'd heard that like a million times in my life. Well, chitlins and blah, 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 but I never knew what it was until you mentioned it.
Yeah, you know what? I've never had chitlins, and so this is I'm kind of excited about this because I think on Friday I'm going to go and I'm going to try them finally. I have had intestines prepared like in stir fries, like in Chinese dishes. So I've had intestines before, and honestly, they were really chewy, but they weren't bad. I mean, it's not something I would choose to eat on a regular basis, but it wasn't horrible or anything, because mostly, I mean, in a Chinese preparation, stir-fried tasted like garlic and sesame oil, and everything tastes good with that on it. So I have not had chitlins. John Tolbert, who is co-owner of Poshine, told me, and I quote, girl, you haven't lived until you eat chitlins, so apparently I am not living. And neither are the rest of you who have not had chitlins. And he assures us that they are delicious. They are a little chewy, but delicious.
So, Dawn, are you familiar with chitlins?
Yeah.
Have you had those?
What's
the verdict?
They're like any part of the pig. Basically, depending on how you cook it, it can be delicious. And chitlins, well prepared, are awesome, are quite delicious. I'm excited about the whole crawfish thing because, man, an actual honest-to-God crawfish feed is a thing of joy.
Where
you just you rip the head off and you
and is that like a is it like shrimp or is it like prawns or something?
They're kind of in a way they're almost like super tiny little lobsters, really. Except they're
freshwater. They're like a cross between they're like a mini lobster. They look like little mini lobsters, but they kind of taste between that meatiness that meatiness of the lobster with a little bit of shrimp thrown in. And then, you melt it with the boil them with the melted butter sauce, with the hot sauce, and it's so good. And there's not a lot of places that serve crawfish in town. I mean, there's really not. There's my brother's crawfish up on 82nd that does a really nice job. But this is something that's pretty out of the ordinary for Portland cuisine. So it's two great tastes that possibly will taste great together.
And by the way, I just have to say that I don't think it's not going to be this weekend, but it's going to be a week from this coming Sunday. Outlook Portland, it was Kelly and I plus John from Toro Bravo, Tasty and Sons, and it was just another one of those shows where we got about 4 minutes into the taping, and I realized that I should have just kept like a bucket of dinner rolls or something underneath the table. because I just started wanted to gnaw off my own foot, as the conversation began, because it's just it really is one of those things I ought to be prepared for at some point. Portlandia. So what is I'm like the last guy in the city to know what this is all about. So Portlandia is a sketch show or it's a comedy show. What is Portlandia and when is it airing?
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's a sketch comedy show and it's going to air, I believe, early next year, and I'm sorry, I should have double-checked that before I talk to you guys. You can read the story and find out. It's going to air early next year on IFC, the cable channel, and it's the brainchild of Carrie Brownstein, who most people know best as she was the guitarist for Slater Kenny, and it's her show with Fred Armisen, who's the guy who always plays President Obama on Saturday Night Live. So the two of them have been friends for a couple years and have always wanted to do a project together, and they started this sort of goofy comedy sketch website called Thunder Ant. And people started really enjoying it, and they got backing from Lorne Michaels at SNL, and they decided to do their own half-an-hour TV show called Portlandia, which is indeed about Portland.
And so is it all going to be filmed here? It's all going to be done locally?
Yeah, it's all done locally. They've been shooting stuff for the last 2 months. And not only is it shot locally, but it's actually about Portland. I mean, it is about the silliness, the hipsterisms, the sort of the foibles of super liberal, super entitled, ridiculous, like city people, which is totally Portland.
I do have to say I'm glad that IFC exists, for that reason, because it's not like it seems unlikely you could pitch like CBS or something on putting up a sketch comedy show focused on making fun of a single city that by definition most people haven't been to and don't live in.
Well, but they've pitched it that this is basically, a sketch comedy about sort of indie hipsters. So they're pitching it. They're thinking people in Austin, in Minneapolis, in Brooklyn, that this is not something that's just about Portland. But Portland has become such a symbol of this already that they thought it was perfect to have it here. And the stuff that they're coming up with so far is, kind of dead on. I mean, they were working, they were shooting a sketch, and they supposedly were working in an artisan light bulb studio, and every bulb is handcrafted and takes 6 months to create, and each one costs $68 and only gives off a glow range of 4 inches.
Okay, then.
It's like the most Portland thing you could ever think of. Like, it's just, they seem to get sort of that weird loopy insanity of being so devoted to handcrafted and local things that you seem to shoot yourself in the foot
by
doing it. So.
You really probably you are onto something, I guess, with the idea that the Portland hipster brigade is sort of microcosmic of that kind of. I mean, there's that guy isn't just like on Hawthorne or 23rd or something. That guy is everywhere. He is in every city. He is in every city.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By the way,
Portland is just a great place to center it.
We're
definitely.
Chock full.
I told Dawn actually once Halloween was over that I didn't really get I didn't do any costume or anything this year because I couldn't quite get a handle on how I was going to do it. I was going to go as Detective John Munch, and that didn't come together. And then I had this great sort of it was high concept, but sort of ill-defined at the edges, where I was just going to go as, capitalized, that guy. And it seems like such a good idea, but I was never really able to bring it into stark relief for myself. So maybe next year I will.
Yeah, like a pork pie hat and a vintage tee with like a blazer with like a latte.
And
with like obviously locally sustainable roasted, micro-roasted beans with latte art.
And like some really, really loud golf pants. You know, and like,
and I don't know. Yeah. That might be this guy, not that guy. That might be a totally different guy.
Yeah, you have to wear the ironically ugly '70s slacks.
That's what I'm saying.
From Buffalo Exchange. It's terrible,
but then with a Naga hide jacket, something, and then a belt buckle that is either Pabst Blue Ribbon or that has a picture of Johnny Cash on it.
That might work, definitely. But Cary Brownstein is amazing in this show. I mean, it's one thing. Fred Armisen's funny. You've seen him on SNL. You already know he's funny. But Cary Brownstein is hilarious. She seems to channel these. I mean, she is manic and kind of crazy and aggro in this. And I mean, she is that Portland girl that, you know, you're probably friends with, but you don't necessarily want to be around all the time. It's
excellent.
Pretty great.
Reader in print in the Willamette Week or online at WWeek.com. Kelly Clark joining us today. So just real quickly before we wrap all this up, you have not had the chitlins. Are you going to be having them in the near future?
Yeah, I'm going to go on Friday.
So you will be there.
Afternoon.
All right, so you will be in attendance at this thing that is happening at Poschine's on Friday.
I think at this point, I mean, they've been talked up so much. I got to see what Poschine's actually delivers.
I'm just saying, I know you're a busy woman, but I wanted to know because now the next time we speak with you, I'm going to have you give like a whole blow by blow of the experience because it's just one of those things. All right, excellent. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, have a nice day. Bye.
All right, there you go. There's Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. The thing about the chitlins is it's sort of like is it in Montana where they have the Rocky Mountain oysters or whatever?
Yeah.
Where these guys are eating balls,
yeah.
Basically. And sort of every region of, you know, every region of every country has that.
Well, you know, basically there was a time when you wanted to eat all the parts of an animal that you could. Yeah.
This is when you wanted to consume everything.
Yeah, that's where, like, menudo comes from.
Yeah. But I feel like there's... I don't know, that's one of those things where... It's one of those kinds of foods. Like, there is almost what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like a shadow American menu. You know, like, there's the typical American foods everybody thinks of, and which is like your hot dog, your hamburger, your pizza, your McRib, your whatever. Your seven-layer taco pizza at Taco Bell or something. And then there is...
Snickerdoodles.
Tamale pie. Then there's this, like, weird alternate universe American menu that is just things like head cheese and chitlins, and your Rocky Mountain oysters, mm-hmm. and like your what's that, Mama? It's a bag of gizzard, you know, or whatever. Which is like that's all. My mom was always on the cow brains thing.
Oh yeah, my mother loved brains, and she every once in a while she'd come home with a tongue.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I've totally had the tongue. Have I ever?
Yeah.
When I was about, like, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old or something, and it's like these stories always seem to involve me bringing friends over for dinner, too. It's like when my mom is drinking the sauerkraut juice and there's, like, some hot girl from my class that was trying to, like, you know, whatever. But, yeah, my friend Brian came over to my house, and I was, like, 11 or 12, so however old you are, you know, like, fourth or fifth grade. I'm like, hey, do you want to have dinner at my house, and then we can do a thing, and G.I. Joe, and blah, 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 whatever. And so he's, you know, fine. So I said, Mom, can Brian stay for dinner? Sure, no problem. So we come home from school, we get off the bus, we walk into the kitchen, we go into the, you know, and well, let's see what's cooking for dinner tonight. And I lift the lid off the saucepan, it's just a huge tongue. Just a huge goddamn effing cow tongue just sitting there. And it's like, I didn't even, it was like a Fred Flintstone thing. I heard like a and I looked and he was just gone, like a little dust cloud in the air where he had been. And I mean, I have to say,
you can blame him, really.
Well, and to be fair, it tasted great. It was fantastic. If he had just not seen what it was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I was really prepared for that, because how many times you take the lid off the stove and there's a big tongue cooking? Like, never.
Yeah, I have no idea if tongue can actually be tasty, because not only was it tongue, but also my mother was a terrible, terrible cook.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so it's kind of like, I just remember it being really chewy and being tongue.
No, it's really, really good. I mean, it's just roast beef, basically. I mean, it's just like really, really flavorful roast beef. It's like you just don't... That's like the whole seeing the sausage being made thing. You just don't want to see it. You know, here's the thing. It's like some people, like they always say this about like those like stick women, the insect models, you know, that they have, like, on the catwalk or whatever, and, like, you know, they're all rail thin. And they would say, well, you know, the clothes, they just hang so much better on underfed women. And you say to yourself, well, okay, even if that's true, like, if I'm a guy, at some point the clothes are going to be off, you hope, you know. The clothes will be on the floor of whatever, and then the chick will be in the... And chicks like that, the clothes may hang, look better. The woman herself might even look okay, you know, with those clothes up. But it's like, you get the clothes off a chick like that, and it's just bad, you know? Like, at some point, you got to see the underneath. It's just terrible. And so, but it's sort of like the reverse thing with the tongue. It's, you know, it's all well and good. You just, you don't want to see it dressed.
I tell you, if you're in the grocery store and you're in the meat section and you look in and you just happen across a tongue, like wrapped in plastic in the little styrofoam tray in the meat section, do you reach out and touch it?
I don't, but maybe that's, but you know what I do that with?
I can't help it because it's all shrink wrapped and then the taste buds are all nubbly looking and I have to just reach out with my finger and touch the taste buds. Can't help it.
Are you ever a little bit afraid that it's going to kind of go and sort of waggle around a little bit?
No.
Or just moo at you?
No, because it's not attached to a cow anymore, Rick.
Fine. If you're going to throw science in my face. I don't do that because, again, I've had it. I've had the cow tongue. I never had the brains, though. She was, my mom was always trying to, no, they're great. They taste like scrambled eggs, which did not make them more appetizing, by the way. That didn't make it seem like a thing I was really going to have. But you know what I'm fascinated by is the head cheese.
Yeah.
When I was, I know this makes me sound like a freak, but when I was a kid, I used to just, my mom would lose me because I would be standing back in the meat aisle holding the head cheese up and just staring at it.
Me too.
See, because it's fascinating.
Yeah, that and olive loaf.
Yeah, because you're like, what is this?
But yeah, the head cheese, and I just always assumed that it actually was like, they just took a cow's entire head and put it in a pulverizing machine.
Well, it's kind of like that. It's boilins, right?
Yeah.
It's like a scrapings. It's like the stuff that came off your femur.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the least appetizing section of the program we've ever aired. This is the worst. This is the worst thing, really, in terms of one's diet and digestion. I think that's ever been broadcast here, which is saying something. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry about all that. Squire's Electric is perhaps to their undying shame responsible for some of these conversations being broadcast to you for the low, low price of just 32 cents a day, helping to keep the Emerson News Network on the air and beaming head cheese observations directly into your brain every single day. They've been in Portland for 12 years, and you can contact them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com or SquiresElectric.com is the website there. So as you get ready to, you know, set up your, if you move from, you know, Halloween decorations right to Christmas decorations, or you're going out and you're going to be buying your Christmas decorations, you're going to be stringing them up outside your house, you're going to be putting them in the tree, or if you're like at that, the Peacock Lane thing or whatever, like off Stark, you know, it's just like they basically need their own nuclear facility to run all that stuff.
Or you like that, that Days Inn or whatever it is out on Barber, that you can see from space. What is that hotel? There's that one hotel, and it's just crazy covered with
Christmas
with
lights.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, never mind.
Do you ever wonder this? Do you ever go to like a casino in Vegas or something, and you wonder like what their power bill is, just sort of idly? Like you just like to see the utility bill for 1 month of operation.
I will say that when I moved to Portland, one of the first times I flew back to Los Angeles for some reason, and I flew in it. The first time I flew back, and I flew in at night. And I really got an idea for the very first time in my life of how big Los Angeles is when I saw like all the lights in L.A. as the plane was coming in, and realizing that Los Angeles is like almost as big as our entire state.
No, it's massive. And it just looks some...
And every single square foot of it has a light burning.
It's like a huge glowing circuit board. I mean, that's where you realize, you know, why California occasionally doesn't just siphon water from other states. It's actually power, because the entire place is just so difficult to run. So your house is probably not using that much power, but the thing is, you don't know, and especially if it's your first year there. So if you are getting ready to prepare for the cold weather and for the Christmas decorations and whatever, you want to make sure that all the wiring is going to be able to handle that. Because December... And really, when you, the first week of December or so, when people really start to get into the holiday mindset, that is not the time to be finding out that something was put together poorly, or that, you know, it's from 1875 and was before a time when you had a computer that was using like 500 joules of electricity. So what you can do, you can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or SquiresElectric.com. Wireemerson.com. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. SquiresElectric.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
You know, that's a very regal, dignified sounding name, Squires.
It is.
I just always imagined that Joe Squires would be walking around wearing, like, breeches, you know, with a brace of hunting dogs at his side.
Are breeches like pantaloons?
Yeah, they're like pants that end below the knee.
Are they like the puffy pirate pants that are all bunched up above your knee, but then
no.
It's like you just got high socks
on?
No,
well, they might be. The ones I was thinking about, though, are the ones that are like tweed and are basically end below the knee to better facilitate your big high leather boots for stomping about the marshland on your property. Your country estate.
When you say you're not talking about me.
No, I'm talking about Squires.
Because I just go home instead of my boxer shorts, basically.
Well, your boxer shorts and apparently your typing boots.
Yes, but sometimes it's both because it really depends. Occasionally I have to put pants on, though, you know, if the, you know, because you don't want to get the, you don't want to be that guy where your junk gets all burned from the laptop.
Yeah, I guess. But apparently from some of the stories you've told recently, you don't bother to put on pants when you go to your front door to let your dogs out.
I don't. No, actually. And really.
And that's a little
Here's the thing about
odd.
This, actually.
Especially for a guy who won't even walk around barefoot.
I was actually going to say, the thing about me walking around in boxers, that's actually not true at any time during the morning. Because, you know, I have a whole thing about liking to be clothed all the time. And, I mean, if it's really, really hot, like if it's the summertime, I do have, like, you know, like shorts, you know, kind of like cargo-type shorts or whatever that I'll put on every now and if I absolutely have to. But even then, like, during the summertime, I will usually have, like, full jeans on just because That's just how I prefer to be clothed. The only real exception to that, though, is in the morning when I let the dogs out, where I will, in fact, walk to the front door just like in my butt, which today are covered with ladybugs, by the way, my ladybug-covered boxer shorts. That's what I will do. So just FYI, in case you were wondering, who is that pale man whose lower sections are covered in ladybugs? That's me.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on that.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Now, before I tell the actual Geek Watch story proper, I do want to share, because this is appropriately geeky, so it falls into this. I sent an email to you, Rick Emerson, with a link, and perhaps you might want to upload the...
Is this the one that says Holy God?
Yeah.
All right.
If listeners, you can either... Rick will probably put this on our visual aid thing, or you can go to laughingsquid.com and seek this out. There is a Lego version of Monty Python's Crimson Permanent Assurance.
I think you mean the Crimson Permanent Assurance.
And it is scarily detailed. And it's all entirely made out of Legos.
The Crimson Permanent Assurance, for you folks who don't know what we're talking about, for like the one guy out there, the Crimson Permanent Assurance is a financial and insurance company that was depicted in the opening scenes of Monty Python's Meaning of Life as a sort of featurette before the proper film, about an insurance company where everybody was going to be sacked and laid off. And so instead, the company, literally the building itself, pulls up from its moorings on the sidewalk and sails around the earth, is sort of attacking and pillaging other financial firms.
Yes.
And it's awesome. And I'm not doing it any justice by trying to explain it. You really just got to watch it. So rent Monty Python's The Meaning of Life and watch it. Watch it. Watch it.
But go check out rickemerson.com pictures or go to this link at laughingsquid.com. And then it's like /Lego version of Monty Python's Crimson Permanent Assurance. And it is just freaking amazing.
I will get this posted here promptly.
Okay. Our actual Geek Watch is an update of a story we talked about yesterday. The U.S. Supreme Court is considering a challenge to California's law banning the sale or rental of violent video games to minors. Adam Sessler of G4 Games Content Magazine points out that many game consoles have parental controls that would block kids from playing the games.
And the role of parenting in determining what is and is not appropriate for their child.
Legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin says this is uncharted territory for the high court.
Hey, here's the funny thing. Appropriately enough, the Crimson Permanent Assurance has taken over my screen, and I'm not quite able to. All right, here we go.
Games, First Amendment expression. The court has never dealt with that. New technologies create new issues for the court.
Well, this is one of those things that they've had several times now, because I think there was a similar case, like when the whole Grand Theft Auto thing was such a hot button issue a few years ago. There was like some restraining order file where they were trying to stop stores from selling it, like, to anyone at all of any age. And a lot of states, because the thing is, like, that's not like a law, right, with the whole selling video games of a certain rating to kids. That's just like, that's like an honor system thing. Like, it doesn't have the force of law, does it?
Yeah, no, they're guidelines to let you know just how violent the game is.
I mean, it's like an R-rated movie. Like, there's no law saying you can't let a kid in. It's just that the theaters say that, okay, well, we won't.
Right.
But of course, nobody's ever happy with that. They want it to actually have the force of law. They basically want the government just sort of there, to enforce their own particular brand of, whatever. By the way, I am going to be posting the Crimson Permanent Assurance Lego building here in just a second. This is really just fantastic. I'm glad you sent this to me.
I'm kind of always sort of torn because I, like a lot of people, if I find something like deeply, deeply distasteful to the point where I'm actually like offended by it. And it actually takes a lot to really offend me. But, the Grand Theft Auto games, are getting into that territory where it's like, you got to go kill the hooker and then I don't know, pee in her body and cut off a midget's head. And that's how you power up. And, and it's like, but at the same time, though, I mean, if you believe in freedom of speech, if you believe in freedom of creative expression, if you believe that people should be allowed to make their own decisions, then you have to just say, okay, I personally find this incredibly distasteful, but you know something? I can't tell you not to play it.
I just, my whole thing with the Grand Theft Auto games is like, it's just, the only reason I don't really play those is it's sort of like, we were talking about with the Sims type games and even like the Lego Star Wars games. Grand Theft Auto is both like a sim and a puzzle game. I mean, that's what so it just exhausts me. Lara's actually way better at it than I am because I just find it's just I have to remember too many things and it's like I have to go to a guy and get some protection money and then I have to figure out how to get to some other part of town and then I got a shipment of guns that I have to get through hostile territory and it's so much thinking that my brain just starts to overheat. In a weird way, it's almost impressive the kids are even getting to like the hooker raping level because I mean it's like it takes more wherewithal than I have.
I tell you though, Angry Birds, you just fling birds at pigs and try to kill the pigs with the birds.
She's just a big 5-year-old kid. She's Dawn Taylor. There you go. Flinging the birds. Let's see. There's your Geek Watch for Wednesday.
By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
By the way, this guy says, worst game show ever was Supermarket Sweep. You know it's true. Supermarket Sweep, was that the thing where you were just, it was like one of those grab as much as you can things.
Yeah, you're given a shopping cart and then they told you, and go. And then you had like 15 minutes or something to get. And so everyone would just go head straight for the meat department.
And just shoving a bunch of things into your shopping cart. That was a show that my grandmother would watch. And she would get really angry if we're thinking about the same show because, like, the people never went for the big ticket items. That was her whole thing. It's like, you head to the whatever, like the electronics aisle or whatever that consisted of at that time.
And I think they also had, like, little things like, there would be some clue on the back of a soup can if you had to find the right soup can with a clue on it, and that would send you to the next section. And I'm not sure. But I think you only got the fill your cart with everything at the end of the show if you were the one who won, and that was your prize.
Oh, okay. So
but
is
I think
that
the game
deal?
Itself is you had to run around the supermarket and find these stupid things on the shelves and read the clues and then go to the next one.
Or to know like what the prices were. So maybe it's like a little bit of a Price is Right thing.
Yeah.
But then, okay, but that makes actually more sense. But then the prize was that you just got to just fill your figurative gullet with just as much consumer stuff as you could possibly grab.
Yeah.
It really is the most American game in some ways. The thing about Price is Right, I meant to ask Kelly this, is sort of to go back to this at the end when Kelly said that she wasn't a big fan of Price is Right, and neither were you. I thought, first of all, that if you went to college, which I know that she did, I thought that was a rite of passage for all college students. You just got baked in your room and just sat there and watched Price is Right in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. You just sat there and just smoked Pall Malls and watched guys spin a big wheel or something.
No, I watched a lot of reruns of Little House on the Prairie. That was my morning ritual.
Well, okay then. Well, I'll just answer the question for everybody then. Just say the game, obviously, to choose is Plinko. That's it. occasionally that, like, yodeling Pete thing where it's like he climbs the mountain and then falls off at the end, but it's almost always Plinko. Can I tell you this? That on the list of things that would make me that would bring me closer to death with some sort of satisfactions where I could shuffle off my mortal coil feeling like I had achieved more in this life, one of those things is spinning the Price is Right wheel. I swear to God.
Yeah.
If I could even if it didn't go all the way around, even if I was just able to just give it a, because here's the thing about the Price is Right wheel. It's fascinating because it just looks unbelievably heavy. I mean, it looks like it just weighs 1,000 pounds. And occasionally you'll get people, it's always like some tiny Asian woman that she's very excited. Oh, I spin the wheel now. And she tries, and it's just like a quarter of a turn. But old ass Bob Barker is able to grab it with just one hand and just spin it so it looks like it's going to come off, the axle.
Bob
so it can't
Barker
be that
was
heavy.
Like, was like superhuman.
I guess. And then every now and again, here's the other thing about The Price is Right, is I did not know this until later in my life, but it shouldn't have surprised me, that they do pre-interviews outside to figure out who's interesting and if you got a funny story to tell or an anecdote, because Kelly was conflating with Let's Make a Deal. I didn't want to correct her, but you're not in costume in Price is Right.
No.
But they do, as I found out later, they select people from a pre-interview if you're going to have some amusing anecdote about how you got to be there, if you're on vacation from somewhere else. And here's the other thing. I always urge my brother to do this, and he never took me up on it, and I will hold this as a grudge against him to the day that one of us dies. They love Marines on that show. If you are, and especially if you're like in the full dress uniform, it's like the odds are like 1 in 1 that you're going to get pulled up in the stage. And I was like, dude, you're in San Diego, because that's where his base was. I'm like, you put on your thing, go to the spin the deal from, standing with next to the guy. And he would just never do it. And I wanted him, as my proxy, to spin for two. To get on that show. So somebody in our family could have done it. And I realize now I've wasted my entire life thinking about things that are stupid and don't matter right now. I just had that realization. It was like I did a little third-person perspective shot of myself with some sort of like Bernard Herrmann music punctuation underneath. My whole life has been a waste. That's really the only conclusion this conversation can lead us to.
I tried out for a game show once. I didn't make it past the filling out the things. And I know what it was. It wasn't that I didn't get enough answers right. It was one of those things where I can't remember. It was like Mark Huzet Productions or something where it was a generalized application where they could cast you in any of four different
games. Any of their shows.
Like Joker's Wild or something else or something else. And I know that what sunk me was I was filling the thing out. And they had this place where you're supposed to write down, what is your most memorable personal achievement? And I didn't really have one. I was like 18 years old.
Uh-huh.
I had just gotten old enough to like actually even apply. And there was nothing. I had nothing. And I'm trying to figure out like what. And I look over and like the guy in front of me is like, I wrote and starred in a one-man show about Letty Bruce. And I look at the woman next to me and she's got this like, I hiked to the top of the Andes. And I'm sitting here and I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, I got nothing. And finally I just wrote down, when I was 5, I was on the Chucko the Birthday Clown show. And I know that's why I didn't get the callback. I know that's it.
I think you're understating the appeal of Chucko the Clown, Don. Don't sell yourself short. Wow. Hey, so here's a good time to play this. This is apropos of nothing. But I've been holding on to this. I've been holding on to this because I didn't know why or how or inside what context I would ever play this soundbite. But you remember me coming in here a few days ago and asking if it was Wink Martindale that hosted the dating game, not Wink Martindale. Why is his name escaping me now?
I don't know, but we figured out it was Love Connection. Chuck Woolery.
Has it got more something? My man, Chuck Woolery. So I don't know what game this was, but I want to say that it was. Yeah, you say it was Love Connection. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
So this is a real clip. This is not augmented or changed or in any way. This is like about – a listener sent this to me. He sent me the video clip of it. And it's like – it's Chuck Woolery's just sitting on the couch and they introduce the guy and the guy comes up behind the curtain and sits down. I have no context. There is no reason to play this. There's no larger point to be made.
It just brings you pleasure?
Pleasure is really the wrong way to put it. You'll understand what I mean when I say this. So without further ado, I give you, I swear to Christ, a real clip from Love Connection from like – what had to be the late 70s, based on the outfits. It's just one of those things that, like, you're not likely to ever see again. So.
Our next guest is originally from Danville, Illinois. He enjoys cold beer and hot music. Says that he and his mom don't see eye to eye on his love life. And he claims that his job has cost him several relationships. Please welcome Robert Faggot.
F-A-G-O-T.
I see. Faggot is rather an odd name.
Yeah, you know, it is an odd name.
There you go. That's it. A guy sent that to me, and it was one of those things where, like, I have no reason to play that. I can't open the show with it. You know, it's not funny as such. It's not ha-ha funny. But it is sort of, I mean, that's a thing they wouldn't do now, do you think? I mean, if, like, if a guy's last, and it is, it's F, and they're showing it on the screen, Robert Faggot, F-A-G-O-T. And it was not like a gag. It wasn't, they were just, you know, it was like the 70s. They didn't have humor then, so they weren't trying to screw with anybody. It wasn't being punked. And you're asking yourself, well, if that guy went on that show now, there's only two ways to go. They would either never, ever, ever in a million years pick that guy, or they would only pick him. They would pick him for like some alternate, get like some game show hosted by Andy Dick, you know, like late at night or something, like on the Spice Channel.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, there would be some discussion about whether they should like pronounce his name Fajot differently, or and then ultimately just wouldn't cast him.
Yeah, I mean they go no, that's in the B pile, and they would just go over there. Hey, have you seen that Jeopardy clip where the guy? Where the answer is garden implement or untrustworthy person, and the guy busts in and says, "What is a hoe?" And then of course the answer is, "What is a rake?" And it's just, it's fantastic. And the really frustrating thing about it is, and I've looked just forever for a longer version, because it's like Trebek just loses it. It's that thing where Trebek laughs, but then you can tell he hates himself for laughing because he's obviously such an anal retentive guy. I mean, he's just such a tight ass of a human being. You know, Trebek has this whole thing where his clothes are numbered. It's not like because he's colorblind or something. It's just like his clothes are numbered. And also, he lived with his mom until he was like 40.
That was the thing I was going to bring up, is that he lived with his mom until he was...
Seems like a nice guy, but maybe a little pinched off. So the guy says, "Alex, what is a hoe?" And then Trebek laughs. And then there's that thing of trying to like suck the laugh back in. It doesn't really work. But here, guess what I'm going to say next. You know what pisses me off about that? They never tell you whether the judges allowed it or not, which it seems like they would have to, right?
Yeah, because it does.
It works both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could argue there's maybe a little spelling issue there, but I mean, you know. But at no point do they ever, they just cut it off right then. And it's like that one clip has been duplicated and put up on everybody's YouTube account. And there's no longer version telling you where the judges, in fact, said that, like, what is a hoe?
Like that one from the Newlywed Game when he asked, what's the weirdest place you ever had sex? And the guy said,
Yeah, which, you know, you want to talk about things that were checked off in my list of, you know, like to do before I die. When they actually finally unearthed that clip a couple years ago, it was like a weight had been taken off, not just my shoulders, but the shoulders of all pop culture enthusiasts everywhere when they finally found it. And they said, "Hey, you know, something that was purported to be an urban legend has been discovered." And it was like, and can I just tell you, I immediately got on the phone and I called my friend Mike Chase of Mike and Amy in the Morning because he and I share a similar outlook on life and we have sort of common interests, which is just basically things that don't matter in the real world. And I immediately called him and it was like he answered the phone like, "Oh, my God." And he just said, "In the butt, Bob." And that was it. It was like he already knew. And I got the feeling he was like picking up the phone to call me. So I'm just saying these are the things that matter. But not really. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, a vast compendium of things that matter, but not really. Brought to you in part by CJ's High Climbing Service. You can find out more about them at cjshighclimbing.com. And I sort of slurred that there. CJ's High Climbing Services is the name of the business. cjshighclimbing.com is the website. 503-228-9278. That's 503-228-9278. They will come out to your house. They'll handle your home maintenance tasks that are messy, unpleasant, dangerous, or that you just don't have time or you just don't have the inclination to do. And they'll do cleanup when they're done, too. It's really one of the things that they consider to be the trademarks or signature, which differentiates them from a lot of other businesses. A lot of times people come out and it's that whole, you know, it's the upsell thing. You know, it's like when it's like how you're paying the girl for a massage and then you have to negotiate everything else. And then it's like you just never know what the total is going to be. Am I right?
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
So it is with CJ's High Climbing. The whole thing is included. It's not just the massage. It's the it's the entire experience. It's the entire girlfriend experience, but with gutters and leaves and things of that nature. So it's like you have them come out. They're not going to like
you might. I'm not sure you want to actually make those kinds of promises. about the people at CJ's.
Well, it depends
pipeline.
On what kind of girlfriend you have. If your girlfriend's the kind who can scale a ladder and clean out a gutter and then, you know, and then bag up all the leaves and put it out on the curb so that the city can come by and properly collect it, it's entirely accurate.
Okay.
Isn't it, Dawn?
Yes. All right. You're completely right, Mr. Emerson.
The whole point, there you go. See, if you find it, you're going to find that if you just answer things with that phrase, life is going to become a lot easier for you. Just make a note. You should have an app that just says, yes, Mr. Emerson. But you just don't want to, like, exchange, like, clean gutters, you know, for a dirty lawn, basically, where there's a guy who just comes and he cleans all the leaves or whatever out of your rain gutter, and then they just leave it in front of your house, which is what sometimes its services do, and then you say, well, what is that about? And they go, well, it's because they're going to ding you to come by and clean that section of it. So CJ's High Climbing, you're not going to have that issue. They're going to come out, they're going to clean it, and they're not going to just put the mess somewhere else. You know, if there's, you know, downspout clogs, or if there's, like, minor gutter repairs or minor adjustments, you know, they're going to throw that stuff in most of the time at no extra charge. You can find out more about it by going to cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. All of their employees are actually, guess what? Employees, not just like some guy's relative or somebody who like dented one of their cars and he's working it off, you know, which is just, that just ends up being one of those stories where the guy, you know, he's just some dude they found somewhere that owed them money, you know, and so he's like helping to clean gutters and then he falls into a wood chipper and then we're reading the story and laughing. You know, they all actually work for CJ's High Climbing, covered by liability insurance. They got workman's comp. They got all that. You can find out more about it at cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. All right. Dawn Taylor can be heard later on this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm for Ham-Fisted Radio, along with Mr. Bobby Fatboy Roberts. And you can download the program later on. Is it on iTunes or is it?
It's on iTunes, and also you can get it at HamFistedRadio.com.
Awesome. Well, we should do one more thing before we end.
Okay.
You should pick whatever that is.
I have one right here.
All right. What is this? Is it going to be? Is this just a story you've chosen nearly at random from the pile?
Just a random story.
All right.
A Nevada woman has admitted letting her 12-year-old son drive her car because she was drunk. The Gardnerville Record Courier reports 35-year-old Misty McAllister awaits sentencing December 14th. She pleaded guilty Tuesday to attempted child abuse or neglect. McAllister was arrested October 17th near her home after a witness reported seeing a car weaving in and out of its lane and varying its speed. The witness told sheriff's deputies he passed the vehicle and saw a child in the driver's seat. Another woman and a 7-year-old were also in the car. McAllister told District Judge Dave Gamble that the other woman refused to drive because she didn't have her glasses, so she put her son on her lap so he could drive them home. She admitted to drinking all that weekend.
Well, the car's not going to drive itself, Dawn. I mean, it's what are you going to do? Just leave it behind? I don't think so.
Here, I'll tell you what. You just get on my lap.
It's like one of those,
and you steer, and I'll just work the pedals.
It's like one of those things when you're a kid and your grandmother would just send you to the store with a note to buy her some cigarettes, you know?
Yeah.
And it was sort of, you know, like it was considered acceptable. I can't tell you how many times I would just walk down to the local, you know, Quick Mart or whatever with like a note to my sleeve that just said, Camel Straits, please, or whatever, because grandma, it's not like her lungs were of sufficient capacity for her to actually walk or something. So,
that's
I
right.
mean, there you go. The end. All right. Well, we're going to thank our guests, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian and Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. So thank you for joining us. Dawn Taylor can be heard this afternoon, 4 o'clock Pacific time at Cascadia.fm or later on today at HamFistedRadio.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology master provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Sagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you courtesy of a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's episode of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News at rickemerson.com or cascadia.fm. Thank you all for listening. Be safe. Where are my dinner, Dawn?
Where my dinner?
That's right. And also,
Marco. I don't know.
Oh, bye now.
You're listening.
Bitches.
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 Network.